welcome to the More Than Money radio program. My name is Daryl Okin, and I'm going to be your host today for the next 2 hours on the More Than Money radio program. Sitting in for Gene Dickinson, who is predisposed today. I don't know. He's not here. He's not here. We don't have 780 years of experience. You get, let's see, I got 30 minutes and you got 30 minutes. We got about an hour. Okay. Welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us this morning. Really appreciate it. We've got tons to talk about today. Again, my name is Daryl Okin. I'm a financial advisor with MTM Financial Group. I'm also a CPA. So there are, if you have questions on the, anything to do financially, should be able to give you answers. If we can't, we will definitely get back to you. we have a lot of things to go over today, a lot of things we can talk about for sure. So please stay with us. I don't have anything as compelling as Gene had last week with his the five estates with highest value, I think, or something like that. Top five on the Forbes list. Nothing like that, but I know that stuff generates a lot of interest. But if you'd like to join the show, 610-720-7900. Our phone number, if you want to get a hold of us, is 610-746-7007. But if you'd like to join us here live, 610-720-7900, I'll get you on the show. But I know he had, I know he talked about some of those things. But one thing I thought would be good is to talk a little bit about you know, our founding fathers and things like that, so we get some educational value here. So I thought I'd throw this out and see if we can get folks to call in. Now, I don't know. I don't have anything to give away other than a free life insurance review, a free will review, or a free financial review. But if you'd like to call in and try and guess the founding father, that's, I think, if you could guess the founding father, I'm going to give a quote. And throughout the first hour, anybody wants to call in and guess the founding father, that would be cool. And I don't care if you Google it. I think this is Google proof. Maybe it isn't. I don't know. But if you guess the founding father, I think it would just be cool. Just something to think about. The first one is, our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. If anybody knows which founding father may have said that, have them call in at 610-720-7900. Now, I'm joined here today by my friend, colleague, business partner, Bill Maughan, a financial advisor in his own right. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Daryl. How are you doing today? You good?
It's all good. It's all good. Beautiful day outside. It is good.
It's a beautiful day. It is. I'm certainly happy to be here. Love doing this on Saturdays. And I don't know. I'm a little tired today. I was up late last night watching the whole events in France, and we'll talk about that a little later.
We will talk about that. It is definitely want to get some, you know, get some thoughts and ideas about that. So far, we have a but let's, before we get to that, we got a, the phones are lighting up already. We have Steve. Would like to join us on the air. Steve, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. How you doing?
Good, Steve. Good. How are you?
Good. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
I have a question. My mother bought a rental property 14 years ago and recently sold it. Obviously made a profit, and I want to know how that's taxed, if there's a way to avoid them.
If there's a way to avoid the taxes.
And if, avoid it, and if not, what's the tax situation going to be?
Okay. She bought the rental property 14 years ago. If it, it depends on how it was accounted for, but I presume if everything was accounted for properly, it was done on Schedule E on her tax return. And it was depreciated over those 14 years as well. So, So what happens there is, do you know roughly what she bought the home for?
Yeah, she bought it for $170,000 and she sold it for $240,000.
And she sold it for $240,000.
Yeah.
Okay. So she purchased the home for $170,000. There are, I'm sure she spent some money in closing costs and things like that when she bought the home.
Sure.
So it's real important to have that closing statement. It's called a HUD statement. For the time she bought it, and also the HUD statement for when she sold it, so you can verify those prices. So you have some costs that can be added to the basis up front. Then there's also costs for renovations. If it's a rental property, I'm thinking that over time, over 14 years, there were certain repairs and things, additions or things like that that may have been made to the property. Okay, so you're going to want to add those to it, and I'm sure that was accounted for over the years.
Right.
The other thing you're going to want to make sure is that there was some of that purchase price was allocated to the land, because the IRS is not going to buy that. The only value you had was in the $170,000 was the building itself. So. Your $170,000 probably at this point in terms of your cost basis is higher than $170,000. So, off the top, if you're just saying you have roughly a $70,000 gain, it probably is less than that on its surface, except for depreciation. So you took the tax deduction for that depreciation over those 15 years.
Right.
It's likely to be nearly half depreciated.
Okay.
So your gain, which will be a capital gain, will be the difference between that depreciated basis. So you move the basis or cost up for improvements and closing costs and things like that, and you bring it down for the depreciation, and the difference between the $240,000 selling price and that adjusted basis is going to be your capital gain. And to avoid it, there really there's not a lot you can do.
Okay. All right. And then capital gains tax is what percent?
Well, the maximum capital gains rate is 20%. So it really depends on your tax bracket. So in terms of tax planning for that, selling the home may make a difference whether you do that. We're very close to the end of this year. You may want to think about pushing that to next year, especially if next year may be a lower tax year as opposed to this year. So there might be some ways to manipulate that. The other advantage of postponing to next year is that you don't pay that tax until April 15th of the following year. So if you do sell it today, it's going to be due April 15th coming up. So that's about the best tax planning you can do is the timing of the year at this point.
Okay.
All right, Steve?
Very good. You've been very helpful. Thank you. I appreciate it.
No problem. Glad we could help a little bit already this morning. Thanks for calling. Okay. So let's see. We have another call. Someone has the answer to the trivia question. Carl.
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you today?
I am fantastic.
Great. I know the answer to that question. That was John Adams, who became the second president of the United States.
And my whole plan goes up in smoke in one question. You are absolutely 100% correct. Did you Google that?
No, sir.
Then you are an astute man. John Adams said that, and it's I always find that one very intriguing in a certain sense because we're a country of laws, but we're based on religious laws as well. And everybody wants to push that aside and say no, but I think John Adams is spot on.
Without morality, there can be no law.
If you don't have morality, what need do you have for law?
That's right. The police force can't be big enough. It's just impossible.
Right, and that brings
Patrick Henry is quite famous, said that our nation was founded not on religion, but on the principles of Christianity and the gospel of Jesus Christ. So our founders understood the basis of our law system.
Yes, they did. And that's what's being lost in today. And that's why I like to bring these things up, because some of these things are so profound that our founding fathers said there's nobody today speaks like these folks did. So thank you, Carl.
I appreciate you bringing that up.
And I wish I could say you're a winner, but you can have a free financial review, free whatever we offer.
I'm an MTM client. So.
Then you don't need to. Come in anyway and talk to us.
Okay.
Thanks, Carl.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, maybe we'll have to come up with another one that quick. But secondly, the other thing we wanted to talk about, I know we discussed it, was, yeah, I spent a lot of time yesterday afternoon looking at what's going on in France.
And,
you know, our hearts and prayers and minds go out to the French people. It's just a terrible, terrible act in today's world that should never be tolerable, should never happen in any country. But it's you know, it's hard. It was hard to watch. To watch.
Well, you know, you know how I feel about that. I mean, this is not disconnected from what happened to us on September 11th.
No, and let's not forget that.
And this is, you know, the free world, the civilized countries, have simply shirked from the truth about the assault under which we suffer and the nature of it, you know. The whole September 11th thing, you know, the political expedient was to get out there and go get Osama bin Laden.
Right.
You know, we were attacked by radical Islam. Okay, and in that case, Osama bin Laden may have been the lead or the actor, but it is a worldview bent on destroying us, and it has interlocking and interweaving organizations that are very shady and shadowy. And this latest one is ISIS. And it's interesting, yesterday morning, our president, while he pounded his chest and his nose in the air, announced that ISIS was, the word he used, contained.
Contained.
ISIS is contained. All right. There are tears in homes all over France.
Well, it's
just hours after that.
It is contained. It's contained to the whole world.
Right. You know, it's contained. So, and so there's a couple of things, and they're all connected, and we show the same weak naivete all the time. For one, France has very strict gun control laws.
Well, that was one of the points that I thought. I mean, the immediate thing I thought about, and of course nobody talks about, is France has very strict gun laws, probably stricter than what's in Chicago, which is probably one of the, or Illinois, I don't know, whatever, maybe it is just Chicago, but they have very strict gun laws there as well. And any place I see very strict gun laws, it doesn't seem to prevent these kinds of things from happening. Now, France is probably even more strict. I don't know that for a fact, but I'm thinking they're really, really strict. They're known to be very strict. Yet, they were able to get suicide vests, long guns, automatic weapons, and get them into venues like football stadiums, concert halls, and into cars that they just drove by restaurants, and nobody stopped them.
Right, and gun control laws don't do anything to stop bombs and suicide vests either.
Right.
The first thing, we've had a number of plots in America that were thwarted by the federal government.
And nobody wants to talk about
those
either.
And we don't give them a lot of press, and it's probably right that we don't, not, you know, because that can kind of contribute to the psychological effects of terrorism. So, but in fact, recently there was a July 4th this year, pretty sophisticated plot, which the CIA managed to stop. Arrests were made. In the breach, just beforehand, the first thing, one of these guys is going to get through in America someday again. And if it's one of those things in a stadium or a mall or on a street corner, the very first thing should happen next and the last thing that terrorists should face should be a whole bunch of armed American citizens.
Right.
You are simply crazy if you don't get this.
Well, I that's kind of what I agree, because I'm, you know, you're sitting there with, I think there was 10,000 people in that concert hall.
unarmed.
Unarmed, and there was two of them. So, you know, they were so intimidated by two armed people, and rightfully so. But 10,000 people panicked, and two people controlled it because they had these weapons. If one or two people, five people in that crowd had weapons and the gumption to do something about it, they probably could have ended that thing before it got too serious. Now, you know, I don't know. I don't know for sure, but I don't know what I would do in that situation. But I got to believe if you out of 10,000 people, you couldn't find 100 people to get together and say, hey, listen, we're going to go take him down. He can't kill all of us and go get him. And if I'm armed, I certainly feel a lot better about my chances. And, you know, and there goes the gun argument. And
the other thing, the argument we keep having, and the odds are we'll forget the lesson of France yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and start with this immigration nonsense and refusal to control our borders like a free, sane people.
Well, what's the first thing they did last night? When this thing was going on, they shut the borders down in and out, right?
Right.
We haven't shut our borders down for any reason in the last 20 years.
Right.
25 years. And it's probably longer than that. But you're right. This immigration thing has got to be addressed. And border, you don't have a country if you don't have defined borders. And why do you have defined borders? So that you can control your country and you know where, you know, under where your laws apply. If you let that be, you know, non-existent, then you have no control anymore over anything. And it's not just at the border. It's all over your country. Some of the things that, you know, these terrorists are talking about, they don't want – I mean, there's some people who want to get over to Syria and they're misguided youths or whatever they are trying to get to Syria to join ISIS. But there's a lot of them that want to be here.
And I give – I do give credit to the president. There's a sentence you don't hear from me a lot.
I know. It's just that's shocking.
But I got to tell you, like right away he realized the value of drones.
You know? Uh-huh.
And he took this jihadi Johnny out yesterday. And, I mean, it was a beautiful operation. It was totally well done. And it was thoroughly ruthless and effective. And it's what we need to do as well.
The more of that, yeah.
You know, sure. So, yeah, he doesn't solve the problem, and nobody said he would, but we have to be willing to do that. It's a lot better than putting a couple thousand American boys on the ground, and they get killed one a day for 10 years. And
yeah.
You know.
Or the thousands of terrorists that are here in this country because their greatest goal or their greatest accomplishment for some of these guys is to spill American blood on American soil.
They said that yesterday.
Right.
They said that yesterday. This is nothing. American blood is what we want.
I was talking to my wife about it a little bit. I said, you know what? This is the practice game. This is the preseason. France is the preseason game. I think, you know, their ultimate game, their Super Bowl, is us.
Right.
They're coming for us.
Right.
And if they can get it done in France, with our lack of, you know, immigration controls or, you know, or free borders and the stupidity of our government, you know, not recognizing the threat to all Americans because you won't control it, not recognizing it is going to allow this to happen. Imagine how easy that would be to pull off. Look at all the venues. In France, what do they got? A couple football stadiums? We got how many NFL teams? How many baseball teams? There's people gathering every weekend.
How many malls?
Virtually every day, there are crowds of people in one place with no place to escape from that could be a target. We in America probably are more target rich than any other country in the world. And, you know, and again, I don't want to scare people or anything else, but we have to realize the gravity of what took place yesterday. And it wasn't yeah. just one incident. It was six different incidents all at one time. Interesting.
Right. It yes, exactly. And in terms of terrorism and what it's supposed to achieve psychologically, it was brilliant. Because
yeah.
nobody's safe anywhere.
Well, and that's what people, you know, how many things did it affect almost immediately? If you were a French citizen trying to get back to your loved ones, you couldn't do it yesterday.
Nope.
If you were in France trying to get back to America, you couldn't get out. Look at Geraldo Rivera, not my biggest, he's not my, the guy I love the most. But I mean, he couldn't get to his daughter.
And he still managed to miss the point with all that emotionalism yesterday.
Yeah.
He was talking to Shep Smith on Fox News yesterday, and he says, you know, this is it. This is a line in the seven in the sand. This is Pearl Harbor. Actually, we had like that years ago. All right. You know, why is this one any different? And he said, well, he answered my question. And he said, well, you know, with September 11th, we really didn't know. We really didn't have the evidence. And here we go again, treating
didn't
this like
the
these
evidence.
Errant little extremists. And President Obama once again called them extremists this morning.
Yes.
All right. They may be extremists, but there are millions of them,
yes.
And they're highly motivated and trained.
Right.
So to sit around and have this academic argument about the margins, you know, so the little ones is that there are millions, all right, and they want to destroy Western civilization. It is not a new thing.
No.
Since they first came out of the desert in the year 600, they've been trying variously to assault the Western world.
And he talks like a lawyer, evidence. You know, why do we need evidence? I mean, isn't it pretty stinking obvious?
The dead bodies are good enough for me.
And we don't need evidence of what's going on. The evidence is self-evident. And that's the thing. We all want to make it a thing about laws and what you can and politically correct and this and that. They don't. The terrorists don't. They just say, hey, this is what I'm doing. What are you going to do about it? And we sit back and say, well, you know, we have to put them through the due process of law and everything. They don't have a due process. We're the only ones with due process. And I don't think terrorists are subject to due process. That's just, I don't know.
The American people know better.
Throw me out. The real Americans do.
They do. And that's what a lot of this very, very unusual election for president is all about. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
You know, Jeb Bush can't get any traction. And this is probably the biggest single reason.
Sure.
He still wants to have, you know, he still wants to play patty cake on the immigration issue.
He wants big government. He wants big government. And, you know, that's the one thing that is going to implode in this whole thing. And with the big government, you don't get action on terroristic threats and things that happen. You just don't. When the government hands everything to you, and is going to do everything for you, the one thing that they're not going to do is protect you, because the first people they protect is themselves. And that's in every facet, whether it's financially, regular life, and also for protection from, terrorists or you know, outside threats, inside threats. They protect themselves.
Right.
And that's what they're there for. So another reason why I wanted to bring some of the Constitution up, because the Constitution is the thing that protects us, we the people. That's what it's there for. Very simple document. But that's what it's there for, is
right.
to protect us.
The government officials are not our rulers. They are our employees.
And boy, do we not understand that as a people. So anyway, you're listening to the More Than Money radio program. This is Daryl Okin and Bill Maughan sitting in for Gene Dickinson today. We have a couple of topics that we'd like to get to today. We hope to talk a little bit about the economy and things that went on this week. And we spent a lot of time talking about other stuff, but it was good stuff. We talk a couple things that we want to try and get to also would be business evaluations and the importance of doing a business evaluation if you are a small or medium size or large business owner, the value of that and how we can address that, and maybe some concerns and maybe some things to that might be helpful in running smaller businesses. We'll talk a little bit about taxes, I hope.
Right.
hopefully we can get to that. I don't know. And then finally, if time permits, 10 ways volunteering is great for your career. Whether you're looking for a job, need a job, or already have a job, how volunteering can be. So just list some. There was an article I read this week that has that listed those 10 things. We can kick those around a little bit. I think they're pretty interesting, especially when we look at our employment statistics. And how volunteering may actually work into that as a way to get employed. But anyway, since Carl stole our thunder on the first one, I thought maybe let's throw out another one and see who can guess it. Let's pick this one because it's nice and short, and we only got a couple minutes before the break. In questions of power, then, let no more be heard of confidence in man, but bind him down from mischief by the chains of the Constitution. That is profound. That is profound. These people were so smart. So smart. Who would think of that today?
Right.
Who amongst our leaders of the I did. Yeah, I thought of it only because I can read and I can pull this stuff up and look at it. That's the only reason I know.
You know, that Constitution was a hard sell on the American people back then. It really was. They just saw too strong a federal government.
Sure, they did.
They really did. They saw the way it could happen. They saw the way today could happen.
Right.
And that's what the Bill of Rights was about.
That's what it was all about. And this is a very simple document. It doesn't have a lot of pages. It's a very easy read. You know, we read all kinds of things these days, but you can read this very easily, the Constitution. And when you look at it, the whole concept of it was small government, so that you can enable freedom and liberty. And we don't have it because of the cesspool that we put into Washington.
It does not need to be interpreted, okay?
That's
it
the other
thing. It does not need, highly educated Harvard and Yale people in black robes to interpret it and tell it what it means. It does not say we, the lawyers. It says we, the people, all right? And it was written for us. It doesn't need to be interpreted. It needs to be read and applied.
So if you know the answer and you know who said, in questions of power, then let no more be heard of confidence in man, but bind him down from mischief by the chains of the Constitution. If you know the answer, give us a call at 610-720-7900. We're coming up to the break and we'll be back with More Than Money right after this.
I'm giving.
Good morning again, and welcome back to the More Than Money radio program. This is Daryl Okin.
And this is Bill Maughan.
Sitting in for Gene Dickison. If you're wanting to get on the show with us, if we can answer any of your questions, financial or otherwise, in the business of life, 610-720-7900 would be the way to get on and get on live with us here. 610-720-7900. Get you on. One of the things, just redo this from the last segment. We talked about anybody who knows the quote from one of our founding fathers. In questions of power, then, let no more be heard of confidence in man, but bind him down from mischief by the chains of the Constitution. If anybody knows that answer, please give us a call and we'll put you on the air and I'll give you a free will review, free life insurance review, or a free financial review. Yeah, we do that already anyway, but we'll do that for anybody who wants it. But it's important, I think, to bring those things up and understand those and listen to those. It's a lot of poignant quotes from very smart people. But anyway, moving right along, kind of past the news of the day. About France. Well, let's talk a little bit about economically. What's gone on this week? What's the lay of the land? Bill is an economist at heart, and he can shed some light on
that. Stock market, after a couple of super strong weeks, traded off a bit. There's some reasons in the short term, but I never discuss the short term in the market without reminding everybody about some long-term things. So first, the short term. Okay. Two things. Janet Yellen, chairman of the Fed. came out in public and dithered indecisively, as she's been doing apparently since she's been born, and caused nervous jitters in the stock market about interest rates again. I mean, for God's sakes, they're going to raise interest rates a quarter, probably in December, almost certainly in December, if not soon after that. And it is not earth-shattering, and it does not deserve this sort of attention. But it is her indecisive and dithering nature which just puts the willies into the market. The second thing is that there was some earnings announced, particularly retail, and it concerns people. Retail is a big leading indicator of a lot of things. And, you know, Black Friday's coming up, and it's called Black Friday for the following reason. It is the day, traditionally, that retail businesses move into the black on the yearly sales and before the big selling season, which is Christmas. So the disappointing earnings in a lot of retailers put a little wet blanket on confidence out there.
Let me interrupt you a second there, Billy, and we'll come right back to that because we got some folks who want to give us some answers. We got Nancy on the line. Nancy?
Oh, hi. I think it's James Madison.
James Madison would be the best answer so far, as Bobby Gunther Walsh would say, but it is incorrect.
Okay, thank you.
No problem. Great guess, though. And I think we're circling back to Carl's on the line.
Hi, Daryl.
How are you?
I'm okay, but instead of ruining it for everybody, let me just add a point to the gentleman who made the quote that you gave.
Sure.
He also, in 1798, penned a document called the Kentucky Resolution for the state of Kentucky, and Mr. Madison just mentioned penned a very similar documentation for the state of Virginia called the Virginia Resolution.
Right.
What both of those documents said is that any government that is the determinant of its own power is by nature a tyranny. There's no limit to its power. And so Jefferson said that the rightful remedy is state nullification. In other words, the sovereign states who were parties to the compact called the Constitution that created the United States have a right to interpose, to overrule, to nullify any and all state, national laws, edicts of the Supreme Court, or proclamations of the president that don't conform to the Constitution of the United States, that it's the state's responsibility to do so.
Well, Carl, if we could just get back to just a fraction of all of the things that you just mentioned, and you got it right, but now you're not allowed to call it. Thomas Jefferson it was, and you're not allowed to call in anymore. You got too many of the answers.
All right, I'll be quiet and listen.
No, actually, I learned a lot from what you said. I wouldn't interrupt you because what you said, if just some people could just listen and understand what you just said, it would be great in this next election. Thanks, Carl.
You're welcome, sir.
You bet. Sorry, Bill. That was fun.
Yes, it was.
I really liked that. And you were talking about the economic things, about retail, I think, is where we left off.
So it's interesting because I knew I was going to do this show a couple weeks ago, and I started preparing, and I was pulling economic forecasts out just to see, because I'm no geniuses, but there are geniuses out there. So when I want to tell you, hey, here's what the market looks like, it's certainly my composite opinion, which is the opinion of a half a dozen others, and they're ones I always go to. And the general theme a week ago was happy days are here again. This, you better hold on, strap yourself in for this huge bull market.
In the fourth quarter, because October was just a harbinger of good things to come.
And there's a couple earnings announcements on some companies, and Janet Yellen wanders around, and starts talking silliness. And the market trades off, and now and the forecasts are, very, very cautious all of a sudden. The world didn't change in a week. Okay?
Of course not.
These people, these things, the general tendency is to react to the market and short-term indicators and draw way, way inappropriate, conclusions about the world and the market in general. I have before me, I always pull this out, and I show things like this to clients, and there's plenty of charts all the time. and nervous about whether it's the right time. If you've got 5 years, okay, the odds are dramatically in your favor that investing in the stock market, and of course, there's a right way to do that.
Correct.
You know, broadly diversified, managed money,
yeah,
all
of that
stuff.
It's not a dartboard approach.
All right, and we know how to do that at More Than Money. And to invest in the stock market, and you've got 5 years, you're going to do really well. You're going to do really well. Where's it going to be next month? I don't know. I don't know where it's going to be in 6 months, but oh, I know where it's going to be in 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as much as I'm allowed to say. So let me give you some numbers.
Yeah, that's not a guarantee now, is it, Bill? Right? We don't guarantee anything.
No, back in 75 when I was worried about my sideburns, getting out of high school, if you remember those years, they were dark years. You know, Nixon, Ford, inflation. I don't know what was more dangerous on the horizon. The
interest rates at 14-15% for a 10-year treasury.
You had the Soviet advance and you had the Jimmy Carter advance at the same time. That was a double-pronged problem. And the stock market closed the year 1975 at 852. 852.
Yeah, there's no one before that.
Right. 852. I don't know if it had been over 1,000 in its history at that point. 10 years later, 1985, it had about doubled. It was about 1,546 when it closed in 10 years. And during those 10 years, we had much damage between, the end of Nixon and Ford and Jimmy Carter. The great Rinaldus Maximus came in and steered the ship of state back to safety.
You mean Ronald Reagan, right?
Yes, Rinaldus Maximus.
Rinaldus.
All right, so 10 years later, the stock market doubles. 1546.
And who would have thought? I mean, at that point, breaking 1,000 was monumental territory for the stock market, for the Dow.
And in 1995, years later, it closed over 2,600. And in 1995, all right, it was at 5,117. And I remember the year before, because I had just gotten into business the year before. When people were predicting a 5,000 Dow, and they were absurd because, oh my God, the world's going to fall apart. It's going to come back down. Whatever goes up,
gotta
must
be a
come
crash.
Down. It's going to be terrible. It's going to be a crash. I got to get out, and I'm sweating.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so now we're up to 5,000. So from 75 to 95, we went from 800 to 5,000. Fast forward to the year 2000, and it closed just under 11,000, more than doubled again. All right, in 2005, it closed almost exactly the same. It had gone nowhere because of September 11th.
Right.
Well, a massive crash.
Sure.
But the message is there, under about the worst of times.
Well, in no other time, maybe in the Great Depression, but I no other time had the stock market actually closed down completely except 9/11, and certainly not in modern times.
Right.
And that's huge. That's huge.
So, in the decade then between 2000 and 2010, all right, the stock market suffers September 11th, two wars, the 2008 disaster, and it closes at 2010 at just under 12,000, still up. Okay, and remember, what you compete with at that time was very, very, very low interest rates.
Right.
So even though it isn't up much, if you put it in the bank, you'd have gone nowhere.
Absolutely right.
All right, and now 10 years later, we're at 17,800. It closed 2014. We're just under that now, 17,000, 400, something like that, the way it closed yesterday. And the point I'm trying to make, you go all the way back. If you have a long term, you invest in the stock market. That's the answer. All right? You do it wisely. You do it using products and tools and strategies that make sense, but they're not rocket science. All right? We use a number of things. We have a managed money platform. We have mutual funds that meet very strict and very involved, very sophisticated criteria. We pick mutual funds that have negotiated their way through this, all right, and tend, by the way, to pick up most of the upside in the market and avoid the dramatic downsides. And we are very pleased with some of the things we've used this year. But we go all the way back, 852 the Dow was in the year 75, all right, and in the year 2015, it's up well over 17,000. And we have suffered some dramatic climatic events in the stock market.
There's no question about it. And when you think about, well, how does interest rates play into that? Because it's interesting because I was going to talk a little bit about this. because I thought we would, you know, get into interest rates, because people ask all the time. So what does the interest rates mean to the, you know, to the Dow? I mean, how's that going to affect stocks? But if you go back to 1975 and you look at the 10-year Treasury note, you're talking somewhere between 4 and 8%, probably 5 or 6%. What happened immediately after that is rates went to their highest ever in, certainly in modern times, going all the way back to 1870, the highest that they've ever been in our lifetime. Stock market continued to push ahead, to your point, incrementally still moving ahead. What happened after that? Interest rates completely flatly bottomed out. Down to some of the lowest ever in history. But what does the stock market keep doing?
Keep moving ahead.
Chunking ahead. Does it have its ups and downs based on the Great Depression, 9/11, all sorts of different things? Yes. But interest rates have been all over the map during that time, and stock prices and the stock market has still been very consistently moving forward over the long term. You can pick any short-term period of time and say, yeah, but what about that? Give me a 7-year period of time, and you look at what interest rates are doing, whether they're going up or going down. The stock market is almost immune to that.
Right.
It's interesting.
Right. And so, you know, we will never cure the consumer, the individual, and public's concern about the short term. And you can't blame them, because that's all you're going to see on these 24-hour news shows. You know, and there's always somebody there going predicting disaster.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't take much for the people to pop out and say, you know, happy days are here again. And we don't listen to either one of them.
Right.
We decide what your time frame is. Right. And
sure.
If you've got 5 years or more for a certain amount of money, we go pretty solidly into the equity markets and we pick some great money managers and we leave it alone and let it take this circuitous, you know, route forward with its ups and downs, and we'll do very well. The statistics say over any 5-year period, you're going to almost double your money, in a broad-based strategy somewhere in the Dow. S&P 500 is probably a better indicator, and we simply know how to do that. So it's a question of, do you have the time, all right, and do you have the stomach? But if you really know and you have your facts in front of you and you have people you can trust, that's where we come in, you don't need much of a stomach. It'll be fine.
Right. You can't, you know, if you're going to look at it every day and say, hey, listen, I need to know that at the end of every week I've made strides forward on my retirement account, or my account balance has to have, you know, has to be at certain, you know, numbers on at targets every month, every quarter, you're not likely to get you're likely to get very frustrated. Because
right.
You'll have times when you're just riding on top of the world, and then you'll have those other times when it's just going to be, oh, wow, is this Armageddon, and what should I do? So that feeds into that emotion. So what ends up happening on the upside when things are going great, wow, if I can just do this one more time, look where I'm going to be, you're going to be disappointed. And if you're on the downside saying, oh, what should I do? Should I get rid of all this stuff? Should I just go to cash, put it into my pillow, stick it under my bed? You're going to lose because you're not trusting the long-term mechanics of the marketplace.
Right. And we are actually very pleased with what our mix for our clients has done this year, right?
Absolutely.
We're doing a lot of reviews now, and we're seeing more and more back in the black. Our portfolios did not follow the market all the way down, although they declined.
Yes, they did.
They did. And
we never guarantee that they're not going to decline.
No, but they certainly didn't decline. I can't think of anybody that went halfway down. The market was down 12%. I think the worst I saw, the most aggressive portfolios were probably down 5 or 6.
Yeah, and they were some really aggressive portfolios. So
right.
I don't, you know, again, we're mitigating those losses, and that's what we want to be able to do, is mitigate the catastrophic loss.
Right.
And if we can do that and then rely on the market to do what it does over the long term, it's going to turn out good.
And what we do, by the way, isn't cutting edge or doesn't make us the smartest guys on the block.
No, you know? I don't pretend to be.
No, we follow the rules. We follow the rules. It's the people that don't like to follow the rules and try to be smarter.
Right.
Right. And try to be that get in trouble.
But it takes discipline.
It does take discipline. And mostly the discipline is to do nothing.
Right.
All right. When things start to shake and shiver. Mostly that's what you have to do.
On both sides. When they're going astronomically well or when they're going very, very bad, you have to have the discipline to play the game the way the rules say.
So. Right. Right. The market will go down. All right. And it will turn around and come back up. So when it goes down, you don't sell off. And the thing is, sometimes people, not our clients, you know, they need the money and they have to sell off when the market was down. Well, that's where proper planning comes in. All right, so that doesn't happen to you. So the market you have allocated out there has its five-year time.
Mm-hmm.
All right, if you need this money next year, no market is good enough.
Right, and at that point, you have a choice to make. You either completely roll the dice to see if you can maybe catch an upside, or you say, I'm going to completely contract and just stay in the most solid, you know, because then at least I don't lose what I got. There's no, you know, if you have short-term needs, it's very, very hard to do really good, you know, to do any kind of planning that's going to say, yeah, we're going to get you to what your expectations are.
Sure.
And you have to set your expectations properly is what you have
to
do.
And we occasionally have that, you know, a client, sure. and a client or a prospective client, they'd be disappointed. They'll say, you know, I need this money in a year or two. I need it for college. I'm going to buy a house. Where can I put it to work for me so I can maximize it? And I say, because of the needs of this money, all right, there's not a heck of a lot you can do. You can't go near the market back to, you got to make sure you've got your 5 years for your growth money. You need it next year or after that. We'll find some bonds, and we'll talk more about that later. That normally works. But, you know, you may be a CD candidate, and that's all we can say, you know. Mm-hmm. If safety and preservation of principal in the short term is critical, then the stock market is probably not your best route.
I have to agree. And, you look at it and you say, okay, I got two choices here. I can become extremely conservative and stay. But here's the, you just can't afford to lose what you have. So, you know, if you want to play risk, you have to be able to know that you may not have even what you have today, 2 years or a year from today, if you want to play the aggressive game. And to me, you know, your expectation can't be that I'm going to double my money in 2 years. If it is, then we're not the right place, because there's nobody's going to give you that. Nobody can do that for you.
There's two things that spell disaster in the stock market, either one of them, and they are at play all the time. Greed, all right, and fear.
That's right.
You know, when the market trades off a little bit, you sell out because you're afraid. Or when the market's up, and we haven't seen one of these in a long time, a long-term, you know, extended bull market, and somebody who's doing really well wants to do even better.
Well, and isn't that the disease? I mean, that's the addiction. When things are going great, then all of a sudden the expectation becomes good, do great again. And it's the same addiction that says, hey, listen, when things are going bad, it's the same emotion on the downside that says, hey, if they're going, oh, I'm wringing my hands, I got to get out. And both will put you in a very bad place. Both put you in a very bad place.
Right. Yeah, beware the financial advisors that pound their chest and tout big returns.
Yeah, like they got 14% for you in 2014.
Right.
And we'll do it again for you.
If they did that, they went way out on a limb. And you dodged a bullet.
Well, because, you know, be prepared in that scenario to be 14 to 28% down in an upcoming year. And that won't be fun. That just will not be fun. So, well, thanks for that update. I know we had a couple of other milestones this week, too, right? We had the birthday of the Marines.
Yes, 240 years.
I know that's special to you.
Yes, it is.
Being a Marine.
Right.
But 240 years from their inception.
It was formed a month after the Army. And the Army, when they were formed by the Continental Congress, they went out and they set up recruiting stations in town squares. And, you know, they had little bands. And I think there were cupcakes involved. And the Marine Corps went down to Tun Tavern in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And they said, anybody in here want to drink and fight? You know, and that's how the Marine Corps started.
And they recruited more people than the Army did in 24 hours.
Yeah, and there's sort of a cultural difference, and God bless the Army. I was in both.
That's you also. You can sling that mud.
But it is a different world, and they have their different missions, okay?
They do.
All right,
they
but anyone who's been a Marine never stops being a Marine.
Right.
And well, God bless the Corps.
Army, Marines, no less veterans, no less great American patriots, all very vital, important, and they serve a great purpose, and we don't give them enough credit on a day-to-day, annual, you know, like it was Veterans Day this week. Did anybody do anything special? I know Gunther talked about it, that, you know, some of these events are sparsely attended, and that's a shame. But anyway, we're coming up against the break, but we'll be back for another whole hour of More Than Money. Please don't change your dial and come back and join us after the break on More Than Money.
Keep on giving.